possibility of having free education, from having affordable housing.
You're listening to Claudia de la Cruz, Imagining a New World. This is Independent Alternative Radio. You can order copies of this program by calling 1-800-444-1977 or go online, our website, alternativeradio.org. That's alternativeradio.org.
I was asking, how do people get around here? Like, is there like a bus, a train? Zero infrastructure. In terms of transportation? Like, and this is not only in Colorado. This is all across the country. All across the country, there's a zero way of planning for workers. There's all sorts of planning for capitalists, but not for workers. And that is also a result of war. When you give trillions of dollars to the Pentagon and you want to slash public education, you want to destroy the federal, like the Department of Education, you want to destroy that, but you're giving $1 trillion to the Pentagon, you're waging war not only in countries abroad, you're also waging war on students here, you're waging war on teachers, you're waging war on communities. And we need to see those as bombs. Those are bombs dropping. They want to slash Social Security. Everybody should be concerned with Social Security. Because Social Security was also part, was a result of movement. What was there before Social Security? We should look into that. Elders who were dying because they didn't have access to food. They weren't able to have proper housing. And I don't know about you, I plan to get old. I want to get old. And I want to make sure that what I've contributed to this society also is there to be contributed to my last days on this earth. That's what Social Security is. And now they want to privatize Social Security? I mean, we can't stand here and glorify and say Social Security is the best thing on earth. It's not. And it's not because the capitalist system doesn't allow it to be. Because if we really cared about the elderly, if we really cared about the youth, if we really cared about the children in this country, then we would invest in those children. We would invest in those youth. We would invest in actually prolonging the life of elders, giving quality life. And that's not what we do as a country. And so rather than privatizing it and having Wall Street bankers benefit from the work that our elders have put into this country, we should be investing in Social Security in a way that our elders can actually live dignified life. But that's not what the Trump administration is doing. Again, we need to be really clear when they utilize the word privatization as the most efficient way of operating. This isn't a business. These are people's lives. And we cannot afford to have these billionaires play with people's lives. This is what's happening. This is where they want us to go. This is what they want us to normalize. And it will only happen if we let it. We need to build an independent movement of working class people with the political clarity that understands, again, that Trump is a morbid symptom. That the real issue is the economic and political system of this country, and that's called capitalism. We need to build a movement that understands that this is not about reforms, that the scale of the problems that we are experiencing is too large of a scale to simply reform. We have earned reforms. We should expand those reforms. This is an issue of reorganizing society. This is an issue of working class people fighting for economic and political power. Nothing less will do. Nothing less will do. We need to make sure that we're really clear about our fate in relationship to the fate of international working class. Because right now, in the shift that is happening, where the world, that world that we knew is dying, and the new world is attempting to be born, is struggling to be born, we need midwives. We need people who have the ability to foster, to nurture, to bring that new world into existence. And that new world into existence cannot be a reform world of capitalists. There are no good capitalists. Anyone who's a millionaire or a billionaire has exploited someone at some point in their lives. There's been a level of exploitation. The biggest theft in this country is called wage theft. We need a society that abolishes, that makes it illegal for wage theft to happen. We need a society that understands that there's over 130 million people who are moving across the world. Migrants who are moving because of climate catastrophe, who are moving because of war, who are moving because of economic sanctions and blockades that the United States has played a part of. We need a society and a country and a governance that has the ability to collaborate, to build solidarity, to learn from other countries. Our ability to produce research and produce technology has declined. We are being left behind in a world that is evolving without us. And we have to fight for a new world in which we can be in collaboration with those that are growing, be in collaboration with those that are advancing, those who are bringing their people out of poverty. The United States speaks about democracy. I had someone ask me yesterday in an interview, are you a socialist that is advocating for democracy? And I thought that was an interesting question, because socialism is inherently democratic. Socialism is inherently democratic. What is undemocratic inherently is capitalism. Capitalism tells us, the system in which we live tells, you can vote every 4 years. You can vote every 2 years. And that's good. That's the democratic right that you do. But at the end of the day, we don't have the constitutional right to health care free. We don't have the constitutional right for free education. We don't have a constitutional right for affordable and quality housing. We don't have the most basic things as a constitutional right. That is not democracy. How many of you voted Elon Musk in? How many of you know who the folks that are running our economy in the Federal Bank are? Nobody chose them to be in the positions they are, but they regulate the economy. They get to choose how many people are unemployed or not on any given year. Like, these are the folks that do those calculations. And the population of the United States does not know who they are. And if we do, we have no way of reaching them and complaining. That is not democracy. And so when this person asked a question, it was really interesting because our concept of democracy is something that we need to revise and reformulate as well. Democracy needs to have the people's interest at heart. If it does not have that, then it's not democracy. If it doesn't have that, we should get the word democracy out of our vocabulary. We have been living in an economic dictatorship of billionaires. That's where we live. That's the reality. And we are moving towards a political dictatorship. That is where we're headed. A lot of people say fascism. We're not living in a fascist society yet. Capitalism inherently has fascistic elements, but it's not a fascist society. If it were, we wouldn't be able to meet here as we are. If it were, there wouldn't be any unions. They would already be slashed. If it were, there wouldn't be the possibility of student organizing. All of these things would have been already. Are there elements in capitalism? Yeah, there's fascistic elements in capitalism. It actually allows for capitalism to be born. Yes, it does. If we think about the ways in which, cops came to be, for example, from slave catchers to police departments, to the criminal justice system that we have, to the hyper surveillance that we experience with our nice little smartphones and our TVs and our Alexas and all of that. that hyper surveillance that we exist under is part of fascistic elements. But we don't live under fascism, and that's a good thing. And that's a hopeful thing. And so we also have to deconstruct that narrative that is going around that we are living in this moment, because that also disencourages people from becoming activated. What we need more than ever today is people to become activated, to break isolation, to become encouraged, emboldened, not to allow fear to strike our hearts. The emotion could be there and it's valid, but it cannot paralyze us. The moment it paralyzes us, that's when we lose. There's many things that we must do. And I'm going to close with these things. I think our movements, our people, have many tasks that not one organization can take on by itself. We need many organizations to take it on in many different fronts. We need to build cross-sectoral coalitions. We need to build coalitions and unusual alliances. We need to talk to people that we thought we'd have never thought to. We need to make a difference, a differentiation between the institution of the Republican Party, the institution of the Democratic Party, and the base, the people. People who are suffering as well. People who were promised a lot of things and are not going to get it. People who are disenchanted by what is happening right now. We need to organize that discontent. We need to organize that disenchantment, that disillusion, into a powerful movement in this country, a revolutionary movement. And it's possible. Now more than ever, it is possible to do. So cross-sectoral coalition, unusual alliances. So if you don't talk to people just because they're liberal, you don't talk to people just because they're socialist, you're about to talk to each other. Because everybody's in this burning house together. We need to get the hell out. The second aspect is maintaining an internationalist idea and internationalist practice. That is very important. What Trump is doing, sending undocumented and documented people to El Salvador, is not just out of the blue. This is the exporting of a model of mass incarceration, which is also a very profitable model. The same way that I'm speaking to you about the Global South becoming a large sweatshop for the United States, they want to make the Global South the prison holder. Okay? Because if you're out of sight, you're out of mind. We're not doing it anymore. We're exporting it to El Salvador. We're exporting it to Haiti. We're exporting it to... We're not doing it anymore. We're not... They're doing it. And billionaires here are making profit out of it. And oligarchs over there are making profit out of it while persecuting and jailing people that are not criminals, that are not delinquents. So maintaining an internationalist perspective, worldview, understanding that war looks different, that it's not only boots underground, that is economic sanctions and blockade. That when we talk about Cuban migrants coming here, we're talking about the result of 60 plus years of a blockade on Cuba that has stolen $15 million a day from the Cuban economy, that is strangling the people of Cuba. It's not the revolutionary Cuban government that is doing that. It's the United States of America. That when they talk about Venezuela and Venezuelan gang members, which is also created here because that gang that they talk so much about was not created in Venezuela. That's not the way people live in Venezuela. I've been there. I've been amongst the people of Venezuela. That the sanctions on Venezuela for the last 20 plus years is an attempt to strangle the economy and create civil war in that country. And the migrants that are coming here are a result of that strangling of the economy. And that's the United States doing that, not the Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela. We have to be really, really clear that they want to be able to go to Mexico and make Mexico their backyard again. But thankfully, we have Claudia Sheinbaum there who has dignity. They can't break that dignity. They've been developing their process through Morena for decades. It wasn't only AMLO and Claudia. It's the people of Mexico that are refusing to bend their knee to imperialism. And we have a lot to learn from that. We have a lot to learn from Burkina Faso as a people. We have a lot to learn from people who refuse to bend their knee. So we need to look to the global south because they too have experienced oppression, exploitation, and a lot of them have overcome and have maintained their dignity intact. So we have cross-sectoral organizing. We have internationalism. We need to do more political education that is intentional, that has political objectives, that allow our people to learn the things that we are talking about here and probably things you talk about in your household. And political education looks different. It could be sharing, you know, a radio interview and speaking with people about it. It could be sharing an article. It could be reading a book together. It could be watching a movie together. It could be exposing people to mass mobilization. Which brings me to the fourth one. We cannot abandon the streets. We cannot abandon protest. We must take the streets. We must move people to mobilize. And we must demand that the right to protest is a right that we all should have. The moment we lose the right to dissent, is going to become hard. I'm not going to say impossible. It's going to become hard to dissent. And so mass mobilizations alone do not change society, but they could transform a human being. They could transform a person that goes into the mass mobilization and feels the energy of many people coming together and they say, I'm not crazy. Everybody here feels like I feel, thinks like I think. I want to join an organization, which brings me to my last point. We need to build organization. We need to build organization. If we're workers and we are not unionized, we need to build a union. If we're students and there aren't any, you know, leftist progressive organizations in our campus, we need to build them. If we're in a community and there's not a lot of community organizing happening, we need to build collectives and hubs of organizing in our community to protect and defend our people. We need to do that. Because we can demand from the state to give us everything we so rightfully deserve. And they might give us the reform, but actually implementing those laws takes people power to force them to do it. And if we haven't built the organizations to mobilize, to organize, to educate, to agitate, then we're going to miss this moment and we're going to go back decades. And we cannot afford it. This moment should allow us to become stronger for the next stage of struggle. We shouldn't leave these years of Trump as they are, thinking that somehow we're going to be stronger for the next stage. If we don't fight now, we're only going to become weaker. And we don't want to become weaker. We want to become stronger. So I want to thank you all for your patience, for allowing me to share my thoughts that are not really my thoughts. In many ways, they are part of being in a political process and a political dialogue with comrades from my party, the Party for Socialism and Liberation. I think this is a moment for us to engage in more conversations like this, but these conversations are not enough. I hope you're fired up and recommitted to do more of the work that you're doing and doing it better. Thank you.
I'm ready to go.
What radicalized you?
Radicalized me? I was born in the poorest congressional district in the United States. I was born in the South Bronx. And when you are a person that has a lot of questions and there's not enough answers, you're going to keep asking questions. And that radicalizes you. I think this moment will radicalize a lot of people. I think that what has happened with the genocide in Gaza has radicalized a whole generation because they want to know why. Why is this happening? And it was the same thing for me. Why is it that my parents work so hard that my dad does construction work and has his hands like all broken up, his knees are all messed up, his back is all messed up, and we're poor? And why am I told that somehow poverty is the deficiency of my parents who work so hard? My mom, who's an educator, that half of her paycheck, she buys school supplies to bring to school. And I had all these questions. How is it that I'm living in a society, in a place, in a neighborhood that, like, we are the recipients and distributors of all fresh produce that comes to the New York City area, the South Bronx? We have the Marqueta, the market. You know, the workers get there 4 a.m. in the morning. They package all the stuff and they bring it to the rest of the city. But I lived in a food desert where fresh produce was hard to get and expensive. And that's a contradiction of capitalism. And so I had all these questions and my mom didn't know what to do with them because my mom was, you know, not necessarily, she was ordinary working class woman with great values. I mean, the values that I have in terms of socialist values, humanist values, came from my family, came from my grandmother, from my mom, from my dad, working class people that did not necessarily have the politics or the language, but had the values and principles. And that made it easier for me to become a socialist. The questioning, the values, the principles, the commitment to transform society led me to a community of people that were revolutionaries. And it's funny because they were in a faith community. So you had all these revolutionaries, leftists, socialists hiding out in a church in the 90s. And these were folks that came from El Salvador, folks that came to build solidarity work with Cuba, folks that were building the Bolivarian Revolution solidarity circles in the 90s, folks that were exiles from Chile, folks that were exiles from Nicaragua, from the, you know. So it's like, there, I was surrounded by ex-Black Panthers and ex-Young Lords at the age of 13. And they put the language together with everything that I was feeling. And then I went to Cuba at 17 and I said, I'm a socialist. They don't got to pay for healthcare. They don't got to pay for education. And imagine this, the United States is wealthier than Cuba. What can we actually do with all that wealth for the people? And a very amazing revolutionary reverend called Reverend Raul Suarez, who was the founder of the Martin Luther King Center in Cuba, said to me, I know you love in Cuba, but you can't just stay in Cuba. You got to go build your revolution in the United States and then you could come back. then you could come back. And so, you know, I was radicalized because of people who invested in me and because of my material conditions. Thank you.
You were just listening to Claudia de la Cruz, Imagining a New World. She spoke in May 2025 at KGNU in Boulder as part of her Fighting the Billionaire Coup, We Won't Back Down tour. Claudia de la Cruz is an educator and community organizer. In 2024, she ran for President of the United States, representing the Party of Socialism and Liberation. She's the executive director of IFCO, the Interreligious Foundation for Community Organization. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. For copies of today's program, Claudia de la Cruz, Imagining a New World, and for Vijay Prashad's classic book, Washington Bullets, CIA Coups and Assassinations, call us 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our website, alternativeradio.org. MP3s and PDFs are free of charge. To get them, just call us 1-800-444-1977. special thanks to Hep Ingham and KGNU. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamyan. Thank you for listening. We go out with Steve Earle. The revolution starts now.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. People use warm water for everything from scrubbing dishes to relaxing in the bath, so water heaters are one of the biggest energy draws in a home. But with the latest technology, you can get hot water while saving on your utility bills. Wesley Whited of DNV, a global consulting firm, says new electric heat pump water heaters operate more efficiently than standard electric resistance models.
They're removing heat from the air and transferring it into the water instead of directly heating an element, which is the way we've historically always heated our hot water.
He says they're most attractive to people who live in the Pacific Northwest and California, where hot water is already typically heated with electricity instead of natural gas.
It's a lot easier when you already have an electric resistance water heater to move to a heat pump water heater because you have the circuiting in place.
The devices do have a higher upfront cost, but there are often rebates and incentives available for buyers, and homeowners can expect to save money over time. According to the EPA, switching to a heat pump water heater that is ENERGY STAR certified can save a family of four more than $500 each year. And by reducing your home's energy use, you'll help the climate, too. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.